This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're going to be here until 11 o'clock. We are live on this holiday weekend, but feel free to get on. I know you guys are doing all sorts of other things, enjoying your weekend. But if you have a computer problem, comment, question, or concern, we are here live in studio to help you out. So feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Fire it up, Matt. We need some green police coming after Tesla. So as we talked about last week, Walmart is going after Tesla for the solar panel fires that are burning down their warehouses. Walmart had seven warehouses that burned down thanks to Tesla Solar City panels, they're saying. Amazon, too, has chimed in saying, hey, we got some fires, too, from these solar panels. And it turns out the folks at Tesla knew about it. There was a big story over at Business Insider, and I'll put the link here for you guys. Last year, Tesla initiated, quiet, don't tell anybody, a thing called Project Titan. Project Titan, a stealth nationwide program to replace solar panel parts that could cause fires. Now, there's a Connecticut connection here from a company called Amphenol here in Connecticut. It's located in Meriden. Turns out that Tesla had to run around. They had 188 trucks roll to replace what they are saying are faulty Amphenol H4 connectors that can cause fires. So I'm going to put this link up here for you for the from the Business Insider. You can read the entire story. But if you have a SolarCity panel on your roof, you don't want a Weisenheimer like me coming up to you as the fire trucks are putting out the fire and asking you how much did you save on your electric bill before your house burned down. You need to get it inspected by a third party because you could have a problem. Tesla didn't tell you they had a problem, but you could have a problem. So we'll put the link out here for you from Business Insider, and you can take a look at it. And I just, again, any technology where they said they're going to save you money over a 20-year period, you got to ask yourself, But number two, it's a new technology, right? There's stuff that's still going to be learned over time. About problems with this technology, and it'd be awful if you had a fire. And Walmart is suing Tesla over the fires they've had. So I'll put the link out here. You can read it yourself. And, send the green police. You have a story, Bob, about another company similar to, not similar, but dealing with a bit of a under-delivery, over-promise problem.
VW Group settles lawsuit surrounding alleged fuel economy overstatement.
Oh, boy.
The settlement is worth a total of $96.5 million, and owners will receive payments based on length of ownership.
Gotcha. So more this is, again, Volkswagen, right?
Right. So owners of certain Volkswagen Group models are in for a payday, if a modest one. VW Group of America said on Friday it's reached a settlement with plaintiffs over a lawsuit that alleged VW knowingly overstated fuel economy in a selection of vehicles.
Right. Was it the diesel ones, the ones that were spewing the extra pollution?
It doesn't say in this article which ones it was. It says the settlement is worth $96.5 million and does not include an admission of guilt from Volkswagen.
Never does.
The automaker will adjust fuel economy figures for 98,000 vehicles sold between 2013 and 2017 by 1 mile per gallon to reflect U.S. labeling requirements.
Okay.
Owners and lessees will be paid from the settlement fund to reimburse them for the extra money spent on fuel based on the alleged false fuel economy ratings. Payments will depend on length of ownership, with a sum of $5.40 to $24.30 heading to owners for each month they owned or leased the vehicle.
Gotcha.
The figures are still subject to court approval. That means that some of them were getting 24 miles to the gallon less than what they said?
I guess.
Wow.
That stinks.
Further, VW said it will adjust its greenhouse gas credits with the EPA.
Can you believe that's a thing? We were in Denver just recently, and the city of Denver has been paying for carbon credits. They're like at a critical level of haze. They're like the smog capital next to Los Angeles.
You mean like a little L.A. used to be?
Yeah. I mean, Denver. It's a beautiful area. The city's covered in smog.
Well, L.A. was in a valley, so the smog used to settle down.
Same problem here. But they were paying for credits. They're paying off credits so that they could continue to pollute. And, I mean, this is another thing. Credits. Come on, guys.
So, yeah, further, VW said it will adjust greenhouse gas credits with the EPA okay. to remove any additional credits it gained from the fuel economy discrepancy.
Right.
Eventually, owners will need to submit a claim, but the process to do so isn't ready just yet.
Of course not.
So the EPA began investigating the gasoline-powered vehicles.
Oh, gasoline. So it's not the
not the
diesel ones that were
following
polluting.
VW's 2015 diesel scandal.
Okay.
Testing by the California Air Resources Board and the EPA found transmission software that caused the models to shift differently during government testing.
Oh, no. They played games again? Oh, this is about the old one or the new?
No.
This is the current
issue?
They
did it on both diesel and gas.
Oh, my gosh.
To post better fuel economy than in the real world, according to the EPA, the software was present on 1 million vehicles, but only 98,000 cars were discovered with lower fuel economy.
Interesting.
So actually, it means that some of the cars actually got the fuel economy.
Despite the fake software, or the software messing with the numbers.
The testing, man. Yeah, so.
We'll put the links out there for you guys.
Link up there for that.
On Thursday, I was listening to Pastor Will's show, and I was not able to call in, but he was asking about trying to find a way to become more invisible online. And I heard somebody call in and say, oh, get a VPN, and you'll be safe and secure online. That's not how a VPN works. Come on, guys. So there's many, many aspects of your security and privacy that are connected when you're online. A VPN is really utilized when you're in a public area, right? If you're going to go and do anything online that you wouldn't want the guy sitting next to you in the airport, who might be a bad guy, to see. Okay, the VPN is just that secure private network that you're going to put together so that you can go ahead and surf where you want or do your banking, if you're really going to do a banking in your airport, which I'd recommend against. But all it does is encrypt the data between you and the website. Okay? That's all it does. It's not privacy. It's privacy from within the network you're on, so your neighbor sitting next to you on the same network can't use a tool to see what you're doing.
But the people who run the VPN have the keys.
They do, Bob. And, of course, the browser you use when you land on the page does what? Has cookies. So you're not hiding from anybody. The only way to deal with security is to not be online. There is no tool out there that you can trust that is going to make you anonymous, because even with the VPN, your browsers are going to try to track you. Right, you're gonna go to the website. The website's gonna try to track you. It's gonna say, "Oh, hey, Bob's been here. I know this guy. I see he's also been to this place. All the different cookies you put on your computer, all based on the browser you use. And so, in order to try to be completely anonymous, you're gonna deal with the dark web.
Oh, and also, you know, they say, "Oh, I see he purchased a widget from XYZ company. I think I'm going to send him an ad for my widget."
Exactly. a case for that widget. So again, you can't use, there's no tool out there that I've ever seen that will give you anonymity that you can actually trust until you actually pay for it. So when a browser company comes out and says, "We are going to offer you for $180 for the browser or $500 for this browser, security and anonymity," well, then you're going to have it. But as long as you do everything for free, folks, who's the commodity?
When it's free, you're the commodity.
Exactly. It's a trillion-dollar business for them to know where you're going. So VPN all you want when you're surfing. It has nothing. You're still not anonymous. When you end up on these web pages, they are figuring out, oh, you're running a Windows 10 system. Oh, that your website has gone here, 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 and here. You're probably this kind of guy. You're probably this kind of gal. You're not getting any kind of anonymity. The only place to do that, sort of, it's not something I'm recommending, is using the Tor network and the dark web. And you do not want to be playing around in the dark web, because if you can't figure out what I just told you, you're going to be a victim in the dark web. So stay away from that and understand that until somebody comes out with a browser where they say, for $500, I can make you anonymous. And if you decide to pay for it, which sadly you won't. But if you're serious about it, maybe you will. That's coming. We're all getting a little annoyed about the fact that our data is being spewed everywhere. But we signed up for it when we clicked I agree.
You mean that 10,000 page EULA?
Yeah. Every time you say I agree, you're going ahead and giving away all your privacy and your firstborn kid. We're going to take a quick break, step out for that. Tom, hang on. In East Longmeadow, three lines open for you on this holiday weekend. We are here live. 1-800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We have one line open for you on this beautiful Saturday morning. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. If you're listening in Florida and you got all your milk and bread and you boarded up the windows and you're just sitting there with nothing to do, feel free to call us. I hear it's going to turn, though. I think it's going to turn.
They said this morning that it turned. It may hit the Carolinas now.
Yeah, they don't know where it's going to go. We'll see what happens.
God knows.
Exactly. So let's get right to your calls. We're going to go to Tom in East Longmeadow first. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, you too, sir.
Hey, a woman called last week. She was having trouble with a very old iPad mini connecting to her Frontier modem router.
Right, and it would connect in Mickey D is no problem. It just wouldn't connect in hers.
Now, I'm going to make the assumption that there's an Ethernet connection on the back of that router. Mm-hmm. Couldn't she go into an older router and, so that, just go from that modem into that old router and hook up that way?
You mean have her bring on a different piece of hardware?
Yeah.
Well, again, everything else in her home worked fine, and the iPad mini worked in a different location. So it could be that, but she didn't say she changed anything, from my recollection. It just stopped working on her. So,
more than likely the board in there or whatever's inside an iPad mini. But, let's say Mickey D's is also using a router with, whatever older software in it.
802.11G or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, maybe she should try that and just, because everybody's got an old modem sitting around.
Yeah. You don't want to use multiple routers in your network. That's going to cause a mess. You only want one router. A router is going to handle DHCP. If you add a second router, I can't tell you how many companies, IT companies we find that have done that, where they've stuck multiple routers in there handing out DHCP, and all of a sudden all sorts of conflicts occur. So you're looking at an older access point maybe, but I don't know. You're like the third or fourth call trying to offer her help with her old iPad. It could be that. I don't know what it is, why it would just kick that one old iPad out of there. But it could be something new, maybe something updated on the router. You might be onto something, Tom, but trying to find old technology for old technology is usually not worth it. Right?
Yeah, I've called you in the past. We're using a T-Mobile hotspot.
Oh, yeah.
Internet and everything.
How's that going?
It's still fantastic. Now we're up to, 30, 35 on the download, maybe 40 sometimes.
Wow.
And 20, 25 on the upload. And more than enough to run everything we have. We ran out of points, though, so let's see. How did my son do it now? We're going through to an old router.
Yeah.
And then using a Wi-Fi extender, so that way we get enough access points. So.
Oh, I see. But you're still using the same. I think you must have been part of that, maybe some sort of beta program, because T-Mobile announced they're offering this Wi-Fi hotspot out there to everybody. So you're still running strong. How much do you pay for that 40 megabit connection?
$25 a month.
Jeez, that's the key.
Yeah, this was on it's on the International Plus, or Plus International,
yeah,
which is not available anymore.
Right.
We were guinea pigs. I have no doubt about that we were guinea pigs, and because they, you know, they got enough people out there to do it, and you know, more for the international calling. I mean, we don't do international calling, although we were in Bermuda, you know, a few weeks ago, and that came in handy.
Yeah, rub it in.
But, you know, it's just, I think they got enough people to say, okay, we got enough of the test here, and then they stopped that.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're grandfathered in, my daughter's grandfathered in. But, yeah, it works great. And, T-Mobile's there. I think they're way ahead of everybody else.
I agree, and they're offering that service, so we're going to find more and more folks are going to be hopefully getting access to a wireless connection to just kick broadband out of here. You know, if they're not going to offer us a fair price on broadband. I was listening to an NPR, it was on Market Watch. They had a Wall Street Journal reporter talking about a study they were doing. This is something I've been saying for years if you listen to the show, that shows that you really don't need a lot of broadband to get speed for your Netflix. And this whole Wall Street Journal thing was, I'll link it for you, but it's got a paywall. You have to pay for it. But they were talking about the fact that you can do fine with 50 megabit connections on Netflix. You know, you don't need gigabit speeds or 150 or 300 or any of that baloney. It's not how big your pipe is. It's really how well you use it. And it comes down to looking at Netflix doesn't need more than 50 megabits to have a high definition solution, and they want to charge you all these crazy, you know, big pipes that have nothing going through them. So
yeah, or even that speed, because you know, gaming. You know, we game online gaming, and it's fine at 30 or maybe 25 even.
Exactly,
I wouldn't want to go much lower than that, but I mean, so we're getting it. So
it's all a big scam. So it's not the big pipe you need, guys. You need a lower price on your internet connection. If they charged about 50 cents a megabit, we'd be happy. And if they allowed us to buy 25 or 30 megabits, we wouldn't be looking to cut the cable and go into something else or go to T-Mobile. You know, they're just $100 a month for 50 megabits is insane.
Exactly.
So, hey, Tom.
Well, have a great weekend.
Thanks.
And, hey, take Monday off, will you?
All right, we'll do that. You too.
Yeah, take care now.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm serious. I'll put a link up here to that article. There is a paywall behind it. You can also find the MarketWatch article, too, from on NPR. But it was, I mean, it's what I've been saying. It's what I've been saying forever. You don't need bandwidth to do what you're doing online. You can have all the happy streaming you want with Prime and Netflix and whatever you're doing. If you want to just cut the cable for the cable television and use YouTube TV, we are happy in our home with about 65 megabits of bandwidth. Five people streaming and gaming and downloading with no buffering at all. So don't let them fool you. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Two lines open for you on this holiday weekend. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. All the lines are jammed up on this Saturday morning. Thank you guys for joining us. And everything we've been talking about has been posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. Let's get right to your calls. We're going to go to Bill in Berlin. Morning, Bill.
Hi, gentlemen. I thank you for your help in suggesting I get a brand new computer. I got a new Windows 10 Dell Inspiron.
Okay.
And we partitioned the drive. I set up a couple of accounts, I guess an admin account and one personal account.
All right.
It's from a big local electronics retailer.
Mm-hmm.
The geeks helped me out, but mm-hmm. they and I have not been able to create a recovery drive with three brand new USB sticks, 16 gigabytes or bigger.
Yeah.
Unless I deselect the backup system files option. And I'm thinking if I have to deselect that, it's not actually creating any kind of recovery system. So what I don't understand is they're telling me at the store that, with Windows 10, you don't really need a recovery drive.
Why? Because it doesn't fail? Why would they say that? Go ahead and tell me. Tell us, Bill, why would they say you don't need a recovery drive from Windows 10?
Their explanation was is you can download Windows 10 from the internet anytime if you ever need it.
Okay, so technically, right? So it depends on your... So this is like the definition of is, right? What does it mean to recover is where they are. So they're saying, Bill, if you want to, if the word recovery means to you an operating system on the drive again, they're kind of right. You can download it again if you have the key, you put it in there, and you're back to factory fresh. But if you want to recover the way you were before you crashed, that's a different kind of recovery, right?
Yeah, although actually I haven't done anything besides, you know, setting up the, I don't know, a drive partition. So it is pretty close to factory fresh.
Then that's, so that's the key here. So then all you want, you don't even care about the backups pieces. You just want the recovery of the operating system.
See, I think you kind of shot yourself in the foot when you set up your partitions manually.
Mm.
Because with today's drives being as cheap as they are, if you just go through the standard installation on a single drive, then what I would do is put in a second drive and use that for your data. But it'll create its own recovery drive by default.
Right.
So,
but the word recovery here for you, Bill, is you want to be able to have the operating system again should you need it.
Yes.
That's your key here. Not recovering from a crash so that you can be operational the way you load all your software. That's different. Right, you know, if your software's on there and all your applications and all that, you don't care about. That's not what you're hoping for. You're hoping for just getting back to factory fresh.
Yeah. I want to get my backup of my own data as I go in the future.
That's
a different idea of recovery.
Well, no. What I'm saying is that is separate from the recovery of the OS that I'm unable to do.
Correct. So when they're telling you that it won't select any of that backup data, that's not really the point of that recovery disk. They're trying to produce the software to be reloaded factory fresh again. So you can do that reload. You can go ahead and do that recovery on the 16 gig USB. That's just going to be the operating system, and that should do it for you. You can even test it. You get nothing on there. Why don't you test how to recover from a crash? What could go wrong, right? What's the worst thing that can happen?
Yeah, so every time we try to do that, we get the message, you know, we go through the motions and show the progress bar, and then at the end it would say, we can't create the recovery drive. A problem occurred while creating the recovery drive.
Is your USB stick formatted properly?
All three of them were brand new from the same store.
You have pre-partitioned your hard drive, though, correct?
Mm-hmm. That was the one thing that I had them do before we created the recovery drive.
Okay. Yeah. So what I think you need to do is go in and delete all the partitions off of that drive and let the install take care of it. If you want to really repartition it later, you can do that with special software. But personally, I just as soon put in a second drive, as cheap as they are.
That would be a new physical hard drive to open up the machine?
Correct.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. But there is some articles out here about this issue.
It looks like it goes back, I don't know, to 2016 or something, I think.
Yeah, it's the whole thing with Microsoft. they just couldn't stamp a 4-cent disk for you. And just give you your software. They're making you, the consumer, now create something that they should have just given you with the silly software in the first place.
Well, I think the reason for that is they're concerned about the pirating.
I guess. Wah, Microsoft. I'm trying to find a good article here that we can post for you to try a few other things. I mean, Bob's making a point there, but you're not alone with this problem. There's another four solutions, recovery Windows 10. So EaseUS. So do you have any kind of backup that you're planning on, Bill?
I haven't got that far yet.
We're going to put a link up here from EaseUS about this, or EaseUS is what it's called. They also do a good backup software that's free called To Do Backup. It is a Chinese company. So I can't vouch.
Oh,
yeah, I know, right? So in my case, I'm backing up pictures. So if all they want is my pictures, they can have them. If it turns out to be that these guys are stealing our data. There's nothing on my computer that I care about, except for the pictures. But they give you some information here as far as how you can create a recovery drive with USB and some of the problems that are occurring with USB. Sometimes it has to do with formatting, like I was saying. You may not have it formatted properly, and that might be part of the problem here, is that when you stick the USB drive in there, if it's not really ready for prime time, properly formatted, it can't go ahead and load.
I think the recovery system does a reformat.
Did you see it happen?
Let's see. I've got some screenshots here.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wow. You're pretty geeky yourself.
Select the drive. The drive must hold 16 gig and everything will be deleted.
Oh, wait a minute. So only 16 gigs. The other problem could be is it may not quite be 16 gigs.
If you have
I did try it with a 32 gig and it didn't work either.
All right.
And
keeping poke holes. You're poking holes in everything we're trying here.
Well, no, I think the partitioning may be
part of your problem.
Yeah.
And why do you use your partition anyways? Just to be a neatnik?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm old enough to remember DOS.
Exactly. Nowadays, you don't need to necessarily partition the drive. You can have a C drive, and you can say, "I've got the Bill folder, and I've got the Betty folder, and I've got the Bob folder." Well, you don't need to necessarily have a separate drive because the physical drive is still the same drive.
Back in the older days, you'll remember this, that you had a 2 gigabit limit.
That's true.
On
the software.
The size of the partition you could create.
Yeah, you had to.
So partition. You basically had to partition back then.
Right.
But we don't have those limits anymore. So
right.
You don't have the need that you used to have. And then, you know, keeping your data separate from your operating system and your applications made a lot of sense logically.
In the old days. Nowadays, okay. You can just use folders. So probably it could be that your partitions are causing some heck for Windows to create.
That's my theory.
The recovery.
Okay, I guess that's where I'm going to go because it's, I don't know if it's 256 or 512 gig SSD, but I don't want to open up the machine to put in another drive if we can avoid that.
And so it's that small of a drive as it is. It's only 256?
What is it, a quarter terabyte?
Okay, yeah, 256. Yeah. That's pretty small. I got a feeling you're going to be opening that machine down the line if you want to do anything with it. It's a great boot disk, but...
Fast.
Yeah, nice and fast, but you're going to run out of space.
I can't remember. It might be 512, but...
that's good.
Yeah,
that's...
I don't intend to use it a lot for data.
Okay.
It's more of a banking-type machine.
All right. Well, then I would tell you that why don't we just try it with a single drive?
If you need more space, you can always put a USB...
External drive, yeah.
External drive.
Yeah.
But I bet you it's the partitions causing you trouble.
I will delete that partition, and just so you know, one of my screenshots here says creating the recovery drive, and then underneath the progress bar, it says formatting the drive.
Okay, so it is trying to format it, but something's going wrong. We'll put the link up here for you from Izu. So I'll tell you, after you've got this recovery going, all that recovery means is you have the software back to factory fresh. If you want to restore from a backup to actually recover stuff, then you need another technology.
So let me ask you one question.
Yeah.
When you created the partitions, did you leave any raw, unpartitioned space available on that drive?
Raw, unpartitioned. I don't think so. I guess what we did, I don't have the machine open right now, but I'm pretty sure what I did is, I told the guys, okay, call operating system the C drive, and the one that's left, if D drive's not taken, call that D drive. For data.
So what you did was you used up all the space for your partitions and you didn't leave enough space for the install to be able to create that recovery partition that it needed to have in order to install.
And to put it on the USB, because he wants to put it on the USB
right,
drive.
But you also need to have space that's raw space.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
For the install.
Okay.
I assume there was space left over in the C section because
No. If it's in the C section, it's not available. It needs raw
Understood.
Space, which is
okay.
Unpartitioned, not unused.
Hmm.
Okay. So would there be a second partition then? And then the
you wouldn't. It would just be an
on
open.
The other side of this. I'm sorry.
It'd just be an open spot on the drive.
So if you were to look at the drive and you had a partition utility and you deleted all your partitions, all your space would be raw space.
Right.
Okay.
So if you created
nothing on it.
With nothing on it. Then if you created two partitions but left, let's say
30 gig, 20 gigs, I don't know.
Maybe 20 gigs or 50 gigs unpartitioned, just raw, it may have enough space to be able to put it in. I can't remember off the top of my head how much space it needs to be able to do its job.
Right.
Okay.
But try the single partition.
All right.
All right.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah, good luck, Bill. Let us know how it goes.
Okay.
All right.
Cheers.
Yep. All right. So he's going to try some drive work. We're going to take a quick break here. Bob, Michael, and Dennis, hang on. This is Computer Talk. Everything we've talked about is posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com by Mike G. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're going to get right to your calls. We're going to go to Michael in Farmington. We have no idea what Michael's question is. What's up, Mike?
How are you this morning, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have a Seagate external hard drive.
Yep.
It's three terabytes. And this past week, it stopped being recognized by the PC as I booted up.
Oh, boy.
And normally when it's recognized, it says I'm using 1 terabyte and I've got 2 available.
Yeah.
So now it just shows it as the F drive, but no statistics as to what's used and not used.
Oh, boy.
And I'm wondering what suggestions you might have either for software to help with the recovery or a local business that might be in that line of work of recovering
data.
Drives that are having trouble.
Yeah.
So first of all, how do you know it's the drive or your USB connection?
Well, I have moved it between 2 other PCs.
Okay. Same
and
result.
I'm getting the same thing.
All right. So then the drive is showing some sort of failure.
Right. It's about a 3-year-old drive.
Okay. No backup of it?
No.
Okay. So there is a professional company that we recommend all the time that's not local. It's local enough. It's in New York. I think they're still around. They're called Kroll OnTrack. They might just be called OnTrack these days, but Kroll OnTrack does data recovery. And for about $100, they'll tell you how much it's going to cost to recover.
Okay.
So, and that price could be anywhere from, I've seen $500, $3,000, you name it. It all depends on the difficulty of the recovery, and that all depends on the type of problem you're having.
Gotcha.
So, but for about $100, they'll tell you what it's going to cost.
For the $100, they'll tell you if it could be recovered, and if so, what the cost would be.
Right, but they won't be able to tell you if the data is going to come back healthy. Like, you know, you could have a terabyte of data on there, and they may only be able to recover half of that if it's viewable, if it's not damaged, if it's not on a damaged part of the disk that's failed, or who knows what. They're not going to promise you anything.
Okay.
And they don't charge you by the recovery of the data, how much data you're recovering. They charge you by the difficulty to even recover it, if that makes any sense.
Okay, sure.
If they charge you by the gig, it'd be a whole different matter. But as far as other options locally, I couldn't really give you any, and there probably are tools you could try. The problem is the tools you start running on your drive could damage your ability to recover from a professional recovery service. So it depends on how critical this data is. So if this is really important to you, I would not mess around with it, and I would just send it off to the company I just mentioned, or a similar company, a data recovery company, so they can help you.
All right. I'll look into that then.
Yeah, we'll put a link up there for you.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help today.
Oh, well, I wish you the best, Michael. Hopefully you get your data back.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah, be careful with that, because if you start messing around with tools and software that, quote-unquote, tries to help you, you could make it worse. Let's go on to Bob in Waterbury. Hey, Bob.
How you doing, guys?
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm just looking at my Xfinity bill, and it says what's included in my packages is download the internet as fast as 250 megabits.
You sure don't need that.
Yeah, I know. My daughter's got a laptop. We don't do no gaming.
Yeah.
So what do I do? Just call them up and say, like, cut it down by a three-quarters?
You want to reduce? You can say, I want the lowest internet you provide, which most likely is going to be about 50 to 100 megabits. If you go below that, like 25, you might have some trouble. But you really only need about 50 megs for if it's just the two of you.
Yeah. And we don't do no gaming at all.
Yeah.
All we have is a Wi-Fi, and she uses her laptop.
Right. You have a monster pipe there. So just equate it to your water service. How large is your water line coming into your house? About three-quarter inch?
Not 250 megabits wide.
Exactly. It would take your water line and turn it into a 16-inch water main is what you're paying for.
Right.
And they know you're not going to use that much water because you're just taking a shower.
Right. So I just call them up and say, cut it down by 200 megabits. Give me 50.
Right. And now the other alternative is when they say, no, Bob, here's your lowest price we can give you. Well, you can say, well, I can go to this other company who only is capable of giving me this amount of megs, and that's all I need, and my price will be a third. So you may have to call the other company that's in the area and see what their speed is. So you can go to the Comcast or whoever they are you're dealing with and say, look, I have an alternative that will offer me less bandwidth for less money.
Right.
And then they might offer
you. Well, I've been with them for a million years.
Oh, they don't care.
I pay them. I keep saying, you know, lower my bill because pretty soon, like, we're going to have the telephone poles are going to be gone. We'll be having... What do you call it? The Wi-Fi. Over the air.
Yeah, you're going to have. Yeah, hopefully someday. Or you're going to have a third competitor come in there, like with fiber service, that'll offer something more competitive. But you do not need 250 megabits, my friend.
No. All right. Now, the modem rental, I know you guys mentioned this before. So I just go to one of the big box stores there.
Yep.
And now the modem, you know, I'm kind of a geek. I'm not a geek at this stuff. That's the thing that all the wires are plugged into. Now, is that the Wi-Fi and everything?
Depends on what you're getting for service. So probably is. They're going to put in a big box that does wireless and routing and everything for you. So you need to buy your own modem and your own router.
Okay, so those are two different things then.
Correct. And you're probably renting – do you have cable service too?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're renting the cable boxes too. So if you look at your bill, just your hardware rentals alone are probably 30 or 40 bucks a month.
Yeah. Well, you got the universal connectivity charge, regulatory, the broadcast fees.
Oh, you add all those fees on top of that for the broadcasting. It's insane. I mean, all the taxes, all the War of 1812 fees. Do you have?
I see one down the bottom, the Connecticut gross receipts fees. Meanwhile, our transportation fund is broke.
So, yeah, don't even get us started there. That's a whole different show.
Why is this money not going to the transportation fund?
All right,
thanks, guys. So I'm going to call them up and say, hey, you know, cut it down.
Yeah, you don't need that much bandwidth.
No. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Bob.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. That's all a big scam for most home users. You know, if I can deal with three boys, myself, my wife, and we have about 65 megs. We pay $83 for 65 megs. It's a weird price, I know. I should pay much less than that, but I'm paying way too much for my megabits. But I get 65 megabits, happy as a clam. No... you know, buffering, as it were. I get all these high definition movies coming down when we're watching something on Prime or whatever. It works fine. You don't need that much bandwidth. And I put the link out there for you from the article from the Wall Street Journal where they did the big investigation to find this out, which is, hey, at least somebody did it. Good. And they'll tell you the same thing. You got to go through the paywall. Marketplace, you know, Kai Rizdal there had them on and did an interview with them about this as well to try to explain that. All this bandwidth is just smoke and mirrors, guys. You're paying for something you don't need. And they know it. They definitely know it. Let's go to Dennis and Avon. What's going on, Dennis?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Love
the show.
Thanks.
Long-time listener.
Thank you.
My computer apparently seems every time I get a Microsoft update or download running Windows 7, I get this little message that says something about a program called Bit Defender. And it says there's something wrong with it. Now, I've scraped my computer. It's not a listed program anywhere. So I'm thinking it's a subroutine or a subprogram of something else.
Well, Bitdefender is an antivirus program.
Okay.
So you must have loaded it at one point, or it came with your computer, and then it finally expired, or you need to upgrade it. So Bitdefender is out there. It's a company out of Romania.
Yeah, I looked that up. I found that out.
Yeah. And they say their claim to fame is protecting over 500 million systems. However, they're recently in the news for another problem. Their software is being used maliciously by a third party. I can put that link up there for you, too, if you are Bitdefender fans.
Well, here's the thing. I looked up, you know, where in the computer it says, you know, all programs. It doesn't show anywhere as a freestanding program. And somewhere I picked up that it may have been a sub program of another program that we use.
Yeah, so it came along with it. Well, again, so if you haven't paid for it and it's not active, you can try to uninstall the program that's it's connected to, and that's the hard part. Bob?
There's an uninstall utility we can put a link to.
Oh, okay.
For.
Yeah, no, I'm good about that. I just can't find it anywhere on my machine as such, as a freestanding program.
Right.
It's not. You got to download it. So go to Computer Talk with Tab.
Okay.
And we'll have a link up there for you for the uninstall for Bitdefender.
And the uninstall might be able to kind of rip it out of there for you, and that'll alleviate the error we're hoping.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, Dennis.
Appreciate it. Take care, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. We'll put more links up there for you, a little more information about Bitdefender and their recent news issues. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock, four lines wide open. I know it's a beautiful Saturday holiday weekend, but give us a ring. We'll be right back.